Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So let's talk today about something a little bit away from the preparedness and talk about navigation apps, right? So we have in Israel, this is where Waze originated from, and Waze is very popular as a consumer navigation app. But there's also, I'm a little bit old school, and I have an allegiance to Google Maps that's very hard to dislodge. And there's ones called Sijik and all sorts of different ones for people who liked a bit more modular information. But what I always wonder about these mapping tools is if you look at the what Waze is showing us at the moment, I'm in the passenger seat. And up there on the screen, it has the lane information. It's showing there's a 5-lane road. And as we drive, as we update our position, it's updating the lane information and showing the turning lanes. Now, what I always wonder is, this is a very, very intensive amount of data to have for, you know, for geolocation data to have all the lane updates. And I presume that they're getting this from a government source because, you know, if they have the incorrect lane information, that's going to be potentially very dangerous for motorists. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to talk today about how navigation apps get their information about the world. There's obviously that layer of open source and consumers that we can add. You can add places for Google Maps. It's kind of a verified process. There's other projects like OSMand and OpenStreetMap that are a bit more friendly towards that mechanism. But still, that leaves us with a lot of data about roads in any particular geography, whether they go down to that level or not, that it has to come from somewhere. So Herman and Corin, how do navigation apps get that basis of data upon which we know what is in different places in our city or in any part of the world, and down to the most granular level of, is the fourth lane for turning or for going straight ahead at this particular intersection?
You know, Herman, I was just looking at my phone the other day while we were driving over toward the old city, and I had that exact same realization Daniel mentioned in his prompt. It is actually kind of miraculous when you stop to think about it. 10 years ago, a navigation app was doing well if it knew the name of the street and which way the one-way traffic flowed. Now, it is telling you, hey, get into the second lane from the left because the far left one is a mandatory turn only. It feels like the app has a literal bird's eye view of every single painted line on the pavement. It is almost like it is reading the road signs for me before I even see them.
It really is a massive leap in complexity, Corn. And hello everyone, I am Herman Poppleberry. I have actually been looking into the geometry of these digital maps lately because it is one of the most unsung feats of modern engineering. When Daniel sent that over, I started digging into the specific layers of data that go into what we call lane-level navigation. Most people think there is just one big map file, but it is actually a stack of dozens of different data sources all vibrating against each other to produce that one little arrow on your screen. In the industry, we call this the multi-layered stack, and it has become significantly more sophisticated just in the last year or two with the integration of generative AI.
Right, and Daniel was wondering if this all comes from the government. I mean, that would be the logical assumption, right? The city paints the lines, so the city should have a digital record of where those lines are. But having lived in Jerusalem for a while, I have my doubts that there is a perfectly updated, centralized database of every turn lane in the city that is shared freely with every app developer. I mean, half the time the road crews here seem to be working off a napkin sketch.
You are spot on to be skeptical there. While some municipalities do maintain GIS databases, which stands for Geographic Information Systems, those are often focused on things like property lines, utility pipes, and tax assessments. They are not necessarily updated the moment a road crew decides to change a straight lane into a turning lane during a Tuesday night paving project. If Google or Waze relied solely on government records, you would be driving into concrete barriers half the time. The reality is much more high-tech and, honestly, a bit more like a massive science experiment. Even the most advanced cities in the world, like Stockholm or San Francisco, struggle to keep their open data portals synchronous.
So, if it is not just a handoff from the Department of Transportation, where does the bulk of this granular data come from? Is it mostly visual? I know we see those Google Street View cars driving around with the giant camera rigs on top all the time. They look like something out of a science fiction movie.
That is a huge part of it, but it has evolved. Street View is not just for looking at your house or scouting a vacation spot anymore. For Google, those cars are mobile data factories. They use a process called computer vision to automatically detect and categorize road features. As the car drives, the AI is constantly scanning the pavement in 360 degrees. It recognizes the solid white lines, the dashed lines, the arrows painted on the ground, and even the signs hanging over the road. When the camera sees a sign that says left lane must turn left, it tags that specific coordinate with that rule. But here is the kicker. As of late 2025, Google has started using what they call live lane guidance. This is a system
that makes sense for the big players like Google or Apple who have the budget to maintain a global fleet of camera cars. But what about the updates? A Street View car might only pass through a specific neighborhood once every year or two. Road layouts change way faster than that, especially with all the construction we see around here. How do they keep it from becoming obsolete? I mean, in Jerusalem, a new light rail line can change the entire flow of a neighborhood in a weekend.
That is where the crowd comes in, and this is where it gets really fascinating. Think about Waze, which Daniel mentioned. Waze was born right here in Israel, and its whole philosophy is built on the community. They have a massive army of volunteer map editors, over 30,000 of them globally. These are not employees, they are enthusiasts who treat map editing almost like a massive collaborative video game. If a user reports a map error, or if the app detects that people are suddenly driving in a way that does not match the map, these editors dive in. They can look at anonymized GPS traces and see, wait, everyone is suddenly shifting 3 meters to the right at this intersection. There must be a...
Wait, let's talk about that GPS trace idea. That sounds like a second-order effect that most people would never consider. You are saying they can infer the number of lanes just by looking at the breadcrumbs left by thousands of drivers? That feels like magic.
It is a statistical approach to mapping. Imagine you have 1,000 cars driving through a big intersection. If you plot all their GPS coordinates on a map, you will see distinct clusters. Even though consumer GPS has an error margin of a few meters, when you have enough data points, the noise cancels out. You will see 3 distinct lines of cars moving straight and 1 distinct cluster of cars that always veers left. The software looks at those clusters and says, okay, statistically, there is a 99% chance there are 3 through lanes and 1 dedicated left turn lane here. This is called map matching. The system snaps your GPS position to the most likely lane.
That is incredible. So, even if they never send a camera car there, the users themselves are effectively painting the map with their movement. It is like a digital version of those cow paths you see in bogs, where the grass is worn down because everyone takes the same shortcut. The data follows the behavior.
That is a perfect analogy. And it is not just the position, it is the velocity too. If the cars in the rightmost cluster are consistently moving at 10 kilometers per hour, while the cars in the middle are moving at 50, the system can infer that the right lane is likely a turning lane or a slow-moving exit ramp. This kind of sensor fusion taking GPS, speed, and heading allows them to build a very high-fidelity model of the road without ever actually touching the asphalt. And since we are in Jerusalem, we have to talk about Mobileye. They are a massive player in this space. Their system, called Road Experience Management, or REM, uses the cameras already built in the modern cars to harvest what they call semantic road data.
I want to go back to what Daniel said about the danger of getting it wrong. He mentioned that if the lane information is incorrect, it could be dangerous for motorists. I can see that. If I am in a tunnel or a complex multi-level interchange and the app tells me to be in the far right lane, but that lane actually exits toward a different highway, I might make a sudden dangerous maneuver to correct it. How do these companies verify that the AI or the GPS traces haven't hallucinated a lane that isn't there?
Verification is the hardest part of the whole process. Google, for example, uses a multi-layered verification system. They compare the computer vision data from the Street View cars against satellite imagery. Now, satellite imagery isn't great for seeing individual painted lines because of trees or shadows, but it's great for verifying the overall width of the road. If the computer vision says there are 5 lanes, but the satellite image shows a road that is only 10 meters wide, the system flags it for a human reviewer. They also use what is called ground truth testing, where they send dedicated teams to drive specific routes to ensure the AI is not making things up. But the real shift lately has been toward generative AI models like Gemini.
And what about companies that don't have their own satellites or fleets of cars? Daniel mentioned CIGIC and OpenStreetMap. How does an open source project like OpenStreetMap compete with a $1 trillion company in terms of lane level accuracy? It seems like a David and Goliath situation.
OpenStreetMap is the Wikipedia of maps, and its accuracy is actually staggering in many parts of the world. It relies on people like you and me who are willing to go out and manually tag things. There is a whole community of mappers who use specialized tools to add lane data. They might use a GoPro mounted to their dashboard and then use open source tools like Mapillary to extract the lane counts. But there is a new player in town that Daniel might find interesting, the Overture Maps Foundation. This was started by Meta, Amazon, Microsoft, and TomTom. They realized that no single company, not even Google, can map the entire world perfectly. So they are building an open, interoperable map. In 2025, that
HERE Technologies. I have heard that name before. They're one of the big ones that most people have never heard of, right? They seem to be the backbone for a lot of car manufacturers.
Precisely. HERE was formerly known as NavTech, and they are now owned by a consortium of German car makers like Audi, BMW, and Mercedes. They are the ones who provide the maps for the built-in navigation systems in millions of luxury cars. Their focus is almost entirely on what they call HD maps, or high-definition maps. This goes way beyond what you see on your phone. These maps have centimeter-level accuracy. They don't just know there is a lane, they know the exact curvature of the curb, the height of the guardrail, and the precise location of every traffic light. This is the foundation for autonomous driving. If a car is going to drive itself, it needs to know exactly where the lane is, even if the lines are covered in snow.
Why do they need that level of detail? Is it just for the fancy graphics on the dashboard? It seems like overkill for a human driver.
No, it is for the future of driving. Autonomous and semi-autonomous vehicles cannot survive on the kind of maps we use on our phones. A self-driving car needs to know exactly where it is in relation to the lane lines because its own sensors, like LiDAR or cameras, might be obscured by snow, rain, or a large truck driving next to it. The HD map acts as a secondary source of truth. If the car's camera can't see the lines because of a puddle, it looks at the HD map and says, okay, I know based on my GPS and inertial sensors that the lane line is exactly 40 centimeters to my left. This is what Amnon Shashua from Mobileye has been discussing regarding this idea.
So we are essentially building a digital twin of the entire world's road network. That sounds like an astronomical amount of data to maintain. I mean, think about the storage requirements alone. If you are mapping every square centimeter of every road on Earth, how do you even transmit that to a car in real time? My phone struggles to download a podcast sometimes.
You don't send the whole thing at once. It is tiled. Just like when you zoom in on a web map and it loads small squares of data, these HD maps are broken into tiny, high-density tiles. The car only downloads the tiles for the immediate area it is in and the path it is planning to take, and the data is highly compressed. Instead of sending an image of the road, they send vector data, basically mathematical descriptions of the lines. A line isn't a billion pixels, it's a series of coordinates and a formula for a curve. This allows the car to reconstruct a three-dimensional model of the road on the fly using very little bandwidth.
That makes it much more manageable, but it still brings us back to the freshness problem. We've talked about the construction in Jerusalem. If a new roundabout appears overnight, as they often seem to do here, how long does it take for that to propagate through the system? I remember once we were driving to Tel Aviv, and Waze knew about a road closure that had happened only 20 minutes prior. It felt like the app was psychic.
That is the power of the real-time feedback loop. When you are running Waze or Google Maps, you are not just a consumer of data, you are a sensor. If the app sees 100 cars suddenly stopping at a point where there is no traffic light, it assumes there is an obstacle or an accident. If it sees cars taking a detour that isn't on the map, it starts to investigate. The system can actually update the routing for other users in seconds, even if the visual map hasn't been redrawn yet. The lane level stuff takes a bit longer because they want to be sure before they tell someone to move over, but even that is moving toward real time. With the new AI models, they can now process these changes in minutes rather than days. They call it dynamic mapping, and it is the holy grail.
It's interesting how this has changed our relationship with the world around us. I feel like I'm less observant of the actual road signs sometimes because I'm so focused on that little blue line on my screen. There is a certain level of trust we've developed. But as Daniel pointed out, if that trust is misplaced, it can be a real problem. Have there been many cases where lane-level errors cause significant issues? I worry we are losing our ability to navigate without a screen.
There have been some high-profile incidents, mostly involving people following GPS onto boat ramps or into construction zones. There was a famous case a few years back where a bridge had been demolished years earlier, but it was still on the map as a viable route. But those are usually errors in the base map, the connectivity of the roads. Lane-level errors are usually more subtle. You might end up in a turn-only lane and have to go around the block. The real danger comes when we move toward more automation. If a car's lane keep assist relies on a map that thinks there are three lanes when there are actually two due to construction, that is a serious safety concern. That is why companies are
Which brings up an interesting point about the ground truth. In the mapping industry, they use that term to describe what is actually, physically, there on the dirt. Who owns the ground truth? Is it the city? Is it Google? It feels like we are moving toward a world where the digital representation is more important than the physical one for how we navigate. If the map says the lane is there, we believe it, even if our eyes tell us otherwise.
It is a bit of a philosophical shift, isn't it? In the past, the map was a representation of the world. Now, for many systems, the world is just a series of inputs that need to be reconciled with the map. If there is a conflict, the system has to decide which one to believe. Most modern systems are designed to prioritize real-time sensors. If the map says there are three lanes, but the car's camera sees a concrete barrier, the camera wins every time. At least, that is the goal. But we are seeing a convergence where the map and the sensors are becoming one and the same. This is what Google calls immersive view for routes. It uses computer vision to create a three-dimensional model of your entire trip before you even leave your driveway.
Let's talk about the economics of this for a second. Daniel mentioned he's a bit old school and likes Google Maps, but there's also Waze and Sijik. These apps are mostly free for us to use. But the cost of collecting this data, running the satellites, driving the cars, and processing the GPS traces must be in the billions. How is this sustainable as a business model just for navigation? Is it all just about selling us more stuff?
Well, for Google, it is all about the ecosystem. Maps are a massive gateway to local search and advertising. If you are looking for a coffee shop and Google can guide you directly into the parking lot with lane-level precision, you are more likely to use their search engine and see their ads. For Waze, it was a data play. Google bought them because their real-time traffic data was superior to anything else on the market. But for the commercial providers like TomTom and HERE, the money comes from licensing. Every time a car manufacturer puts a navigation system in a vehicle, they pay a licensing fee for that map data. And those fees are significant because the car companies are essentially outsourcing the hardest part of the software to the experts.
So it's a classic case of, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, or at least your data is. By using these apps, we are providing the very data that makes them valuable. We are the ones counting the lanes for them just by driving over them. It is a bit of a symbiotic relationship, but it also feels a little exploitative if you think about it too hard.
Exactly. It's the ultimate crowdsourcing project. Every time you drive to work with your navigation on, you are helping refine the map for the person driving behind you. You are confirming that the lanes are still there, that the speed limit is still 60, and that the turn lane hasn't been blocked off. It is a massive, global, silent collaboration. But you are right about the privacy implications. If they are looking at my GPS traces with such precision that they can tell which lane I am in, they essentially know my exact path through the world. I know the data is anonymized, but with that level of granularity, is it really possible to keep it anonymous? That is a major point of debate in the industry. Most companies use what they call differential privacy or other techniques to scrub the data. They might strip off the beginning and end of a trip so they don't know exactly which driveway you started in. They also aggregate the data so they are looking at the behavior of 1,000 cars, not just yours. But as the maps get more detailed, the data we provide to them becomes more revealing. In 2025, new regulations in Europe and parts of the United States started requiring companies to be much more transparent about how this lane-level telemetry is stored. It is the price we pay for never getting lost again, but it is a price we should keep an eye on.
It's a trade-off I think most of us have subconsciously accepted. I mean, I remember the days of printing out MapQuest directions and trying to read them while driving. That was arguably much more dangerous than any lane-level GPS error. Or trying to unfold a giant paper map while navigating a roundabout in a foreign country. We have come a long way, but we have also given up a bit of our independence.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of roundabouts, did you know that mapping roundabouts is one of the hardest things for these AIs to do? Because the geometry is so circular and the exits are so close together, GPS often gets confused about which exit you actually took. That is why you often hear the app say at the roundabout, take the third exit instead of just telling you to turn left. It's a way of compensating for the inherent inaccuracy of the sensors. It's all about managing uncertainty. These apps are essentially constantly running a probability game. They are saying, I am 80% sure he is in the left lane, but if he doesn't turn in the next 50 meters, I'll have to revise that to 20%.
That's a great aha moment. I always wondered why it was so specific about the exit number. It's because it doesn't trust its own ability to know exactly when you've turned. It's waiting for you to clear the intersection and establish a new straight line path before it's sure where you are. It is like the app is constantly second guessing itself.
Precisely. It's a dynamic, living model. So, to summarize for Daniel, the data comes from a massive fusion of sources. We've got the mobile camera fleets like Street View, the statistical analysis of millions of GPS traces, the dedicated army of volunteer editors in communities like Waze and OpenStreetMap, and the high-end commercial data from companies like HERE and Mobileye that map the world for autonomous cars. And now, we have the Overture Maps Foundation bringing it all together into an open standard. It's not just one source. It's a global web of information that is constantly checking and correcting itself.
It really makes you appreciate the sheer scale of the operation. Every time I see a lane must turn left sign now, I'm going to think about some AI somewhere scanning that image and updating a database so that I don't miss my turn. It's a lot of work just to help me get to the grocery store. But it is work that makes our modern world possible. Herman, I think we've thoroughly explored the how and why behind those lane markers. It's a lot more than just lines on a screen.
It definitely is. And before we wrap up, I just want to say, if you're enjoying these deep dives into the weird prompts Daniel sends our way, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show, and we love reading your feedback. We are always looking for the next rabbit hole to jump down.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. And remember, you can always find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We've got the full archive there, plus a contact form if you've got a burning question or a weird prompt of your own that you want us to tackle. We might even feature it on a future episode.
This has been a fun one. Thanks for the prompt, Daniel. It definitely made me look at my navigation app a little differently during the drive today. I think I'll be a bit more patient the next time it tells me to stay in the middle lane.
Same here. Alright everyone, thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We'll be back next week with another exploration of the obscure and the interesting. Until then, keep questioning the world around you, even the parts you see every day on your phone screen.
Herman Poppleberry, signing off. Take care everyone, and stay curious.
And Corn too. Catch you later, and have a good one.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.